Hey everybody, welcome to my podcast. It is Mike Norman. Today is Monday, April 13th. Well, I had an interesting conversation today with Paul Craig Roberts. Actually, it was supposed to be a podcast, and I did record it, but I am not posting it as a podcast because it just got a little contentious and it was all over the place. But I will kind of summarize what the discussion was about. And there were a number of issues. I went into this podcast being a big fan of Paul Craig Roberts. We post a lot of his stuff up here on the Mike Norman Economics blog. I think he's very accurate in his portrayal of the United States, the neoconservatives, the so-called neocons, their pursuit of empire, American hegemony, the view that American exceptionalism and all that, and what's going on in Russia and the Ukraine and how the United States has really been behind that, and not just the Ukrainian situation, but a lot of these other involvements we see, the disasters, the wars, the constant war, all this kind of stuff. You know, we write about it, but we got into economics. And first, before we even get into economics, and he was a former Reagan guy. He was a assistant secretary of the Treasury. I don't know how many assistants there are. I mean, that's not like, I think, you know, there's the undersecretary, there's assistants. There could be assistants in many different facets. But he was there during the Reagan administration. I think he's pretty good friends with David Stockman. So that says a lot right there. I was not aware of that. And I think he's pretty good friends just by corollary with guys like Larry Kudlow. These are all the supply side. And he says, or on his blog and his bio, he says he's one of the founders or the creators of supply side economics, which I think is something that really does not work in the way that it is sold or portrayed. But anyway, before we get into that, we started the conversation off, and it started off in the Reaganomics period, and we were talking about supply. So before we get to that, let me backtrack a second. We got into the whole bit about Russia and Reagan's defeat of communism, and there's a very popular storyline out there that says the United States defeated communism, Reagan defeated communism because the United States outspent the Soviet Union, and the Soviet Union was afraid of getting involved in an arm race because its economy was in a shambles, and so therefore they just kind of gave up. And this notion that we outspent or we threatened to outspend them. And let me just say flat out that this idea, this storyline is completely and utterly preposterous, okay? If you think about it, and I don't need to point to any experts or debunking of this theory, and there's plenty of it out there. If you want to go look it up, go look it up. There's plenty of people who have taken on this story and totally ripped it to shreds for good reason. If you think about it logically, the Soviet Union had no constraint whatsoever on its ability to create armaments and engage in an arms race. If you think about it, just logically, if that were the case, the Soviet Union would have completely laid down and collapsed in front of Hitler's armies. It would not have been able to prosecute a war and ultimately win. And it was really the Soviets who won the war in Europe. The United States, by the time we came in, it was basically a mop-up operation, okay? The Soviet Union, up until the time of Reagan, had every capability of producing steel and munitions and cranking out soldiers and anything, and the high-tech warfare and nuclear weapons. It had every ability whatsoever to continue doing that. The statement or the claim that somehow it could not afford to do that. First of all, you're talking about the biggest country on earth with more resources, physical resources, than any other country in the world. And it created this massive army, which was the world's the world's other superpower, solely internally. It was a closed economy. It spent in rubles. And it was as powerful, it built up an army as powerful as the U.S. military. And there were two superpowers, and the Soviet Union was one of them. So to say that it could not go on doing this, that somehow we threatened to spend more and they, that's it, we give up, it's over. There were a lot of other things going on. And, I was asked the question by Paul Craig Roberts, because he did not accept my, to him it was 100% that Reagan threatened to spend a lot of money, and that's what eventually made the Soviet Union give up and fall apart. And it's just completely and utterly preposterous. I don't know. He asked the question, well, what made Gorbachev give? I have no idea what made Gorbachev. You got to ask Gorbachev. Maybe he got tired of it. There were countries that were starting to rise up and break away. You had the Solidarity labor movement in Poland. You had some opening up, some fractures. It was unwieldy. It was, spread across 18 time zones. It was very hard to you needed to really want to keep that together. And who knows, maybe the Soviet people, maybe the leadership grew tired of it. But the idea that they could not engage in an arm race with the United States and Reagan threatened to spend all this money, that's just completely and utterly ridiculous, okay? I mean, it is absolute nonsense. If you're a gung-ho, look, back then I believed it. I was a big Reagan supporter in the 80s, 100%. I was one of the, member of the tribe, the rah-rah, flag-waving, patriotic, Reagan, hawkish. I'm not like that anymore. You know me. But this storyline is complete and utter nonsense. And I think to the people who say this today, who are otherwise educated people, who say this kind of stuff, I don't know how they can say this with a straight face. I don't know how they can say this with any seriousness. I mean, this is a total propaganda line. Okay, and if you buy, we're going to threaten to spend a lot of money, and a whole entire superpower says, okay, that's it, we give up, we don't want to do that. So now that was the one thing. Now there was another thing. We started talking about supply side economics, and this guy is a 100%. I think we posted something even on the blog about his explanation of what supply side economics is. And to this day, he is a very ardent supporter. He got testy, he got defensive, and I'm of the view that supply side was a total failure. If you look at just about any metric of economic well-being of a nation, if you look at very simple things, if you look at GDP growth, if you look at income growth, if you look at wage growth, all of those things dropped off precipitously right at 1980. You could see it like a fracture. It just, all from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, things were going really, really well. And then as soon as Reagan got into office, throughout the entire decade, you saw that drop off. And it basically, once it dropped off, it stayed down. There was a little rise again in the late 1990s, and you could probably attribute that to the whole tech boom and the internet and Y2K and all the capital investment that was involved with that. But then it dropped way off again and continues to fall because we continue to employ these supply side ideas, the tax cuts for corporations, that sort of thing, which I'm going to get into, because I put up a post earlier today about corporate taxes. So The supply side idea, if it was a true, if that were a true fact, that it was such an incredible, policy era, you would see it. I mean, you would see it. You can literally take the annual growth in GDP, the average annual growth in GDP in the 1970s, when we had some significant inflation. And that's another thing that Paul Craig Roberts was talking about. He said that the inflation in the 1970s was driven by Keynesian policies. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, what about the two oil embargoes? You don't consider that as a driver of inflation back then? And he said, nah, that had nothing to do with it. It was Keynesian spending policies. And then he goes on to call it the monetarism by the central banks, which is not Keynes. First of all, that's not Keynesianism, okay? He said the monetary policy created aggregate demand, pushed aggregate demand, and that drove up prices, and which is a contradiction, because nowadays, in the last 7 years, we have seen monetary policy engaged in a way that we have never seen before in history, and there's really no aggregate demand. The economy is relatively soft, okay? And we have no inflation. So you can't say back in that period in the 70s, the reason for the inflation was monetary policy, which was a form of Keynesianism. It's not. You can't conflate the two. It's completely different. And I also think you can't ignore the two oil embargoes. Now, he brought up, he said, well, if it was oil, then how come we didn't see inflation in back in 2008 or even recently when oil prices were up around $100 a barrel and when it ran up to $150 a barrel? Why didn't we see inflation at that time? And I don't have a perfect answer to this. I can tell you that things are a little bit different now in that we don't have the wage push inflation that we had in the 70s because unions are a tiny fraction. Union membership in the United States is a tiny fraction of what it was in the 1970s, which was really the heyday of unions. So the ability of workers to demand higher wages, the leverage, the bargaining power that workers had in the 1970s was much higher than what we see today, where union membership is a fraction of what it was. So when prices rose, when the CPI rose, you did not have the ability of workers to demand higher wages now as you did back in the 1970s. That is obviously a factor. I don't know if that was the total factor. I don't know if anyone really knows. A lot of times in economics, we don't know 100%. We can see, we can observe, we could infer. But, many times we don't know the exact reason, all right? That's one reason I'm giving to you right now. But you can clearly see, if you look at a chart of CPI on a year-over-year percentage change basis, or you could look at it on compounded annual percent change, rate of growth rather, there are two very distinct periods lining up exactly with the two oil embargoes that we had. So, I mean, it's very hard to accept that is not at least an important factor to say, he was just totally dismissive of that. Totally dismissive of that. And I think he made a good point or a decent argument when he said, well, why didn't it happen, when we ran up to $150 or at $100 a barrel? Other things have gone down. So that's another explanation. There are other things, technology, services, a lot of things as a result of technology, electronics, telephones, you know, all this thing also has to do with it tapping into very cheap labor overseas. And he did talk about that extensively, about the trade agreements and being able to outsource labor. And I agree with him on that. And I agree that that was a factor. But the supply side stuff, if you look at, and by the way, you can go check out these graphs at the St. Louis Fed website, the FRED database. You know, I use that a lot. I use that in my Forex course. So we put charts up here on the blog many times. It's a great resource on that FRED, stlouisfed.org, research.stlouisfed.org. You can run all these graphs and look at the data yourself. So this, if you look at, by the way, if you look at the Reagan period, okay, which is the so-called supply side, you know, you cut marginal tax rates and that induces people to want to work more because they get to keep more. First of all, most of the people who got the real benefit of that were, again, the people at the top who saw their rates come down from like 70% to 75% to 35%. That was enormous. Everybody else who were not really in the top brackets, you saw a little bit of a cut, but not like the people at the top, okay? And the people at the top, the very wealthy, we know this, their money is really, their income, their wealth is from assets, the ownership of assets. But if you, and so the idea behind supply side is you cut the marginal tax rates and this induces everybody to work more, to want to work more because they get to keep more of their money, and then the output goes up, and as the output goes up, inflation comes down, right? Because MV equals PT. If you increase the quantity of goods, even if you increase the money supply, if you increase the quantity of goods or if you lower the velocity, then the price actually stays the same or comes down. In this case, output. And again, we don't see we don't see the output, you know, coming down, at least on a comparative basis. I just mentioned that GDP growth, average annual GDP growth in the 1980s was below where it was in the 1970s, even in real terms, and even with the inflation, two bouts of inflation that we saw in the 1970s. That's a very, very interesting fact. That many on these supply side, many of these supply side peoples, they just kind of gloss over or they're not aware of it, that the real gross domestic product was higher. The average annual change in real gross domestic product was higher in the 1970s than it was in the 1980s, with the exception of one period. When we came out of that steep recession in 1982, growth shot up again for a year, you know, and then it just kind of settled back down in a range that was below anything we saw, not just in the 1970s, but the 1960s and the 1950s, where he called that the great period of Keynesian policies. And that was one of the reasons that he says we went to this neoliberal, the neoliberalism emerged as a in response to the failure of Keynesian policies. I don't know what sort of failure there really was, except for the inflationary periods that we had in the 1970s. I think it was a political move. It was a move to the right. It was a brand of economics that was kind of a blended hybrid from Keynes to monetarism put forth by Samuelson, which really caught on. But, you know, again, that the supply side, if you look at Reagan's biggest... Okay, so output did not increase on a comparative basis. It did not, sorry. I mean, the stock market went up, and we saw the same exact thing we see nowadays, which is kind of like this inflating of financial assets, the financialization of the economy. That's the other thing he said, that Reagan did not deregulate and, you know, that sort of stuff that we associate with neoliberal policies. There was no, there was deregulation. You had oil, the oil market deregulation. You had the end of the windfall profits tax. You had the attack on the unions. Reagan started with firing all the air traffic controllers. That whole thing started in the 1980s, okay? So here's what I was going to say. The biggest component, if you look at GDP in the 1980s, if you look at the Reagan deficits, the biggest spending component, okay, the biggest spending component, and that's what it was. Really, you could call this whole thing a demand-side expansion. It wasn't supply-side. It's very clear in the numbers that it wasn't supply-side. But the biggest component of spending in Reagan's two terms was the the increase in interest paid by the government. That component shot way up in the 1980s because the deficit expanded. Okay, Reagan cut taxes. He increased military spending, which a lot of people would point at the military spending as a stimulus, and it was. However, the biggest component, bigger than the military spending in terms of the amount it increased, and maybe even the nominal amount, I have to go back and check, was interest on the debt. The deficit expanded, interest rates were high, and it was the interest on the debt. Those payments increase, and that, again, that's a fiscal injection. The government is a net payer of interest. That is a fiscal injection. All right? So that flowed into the economy. By the way, that's a very, just as a side point, that's a very interesting little observation. It's not so little, because we're facing a moment in time when everybody is all nervous and scared and worried about the Fed perhaps going to raise interest rates at some point. Now we're getting closer. We're getting closer, right? Everybody's all nervous. And, you know, that could be the beginning of a major stimulus, just like in the Reagan period. That those interest payments, and by the way, we saw the same thing in the Russian economy. The Russian economy, after they put on the United States and Europe imposed the sanctions, and then in December, in reaction to the tumbling ruble, the Russian central bank jacked up its interest rate overnight to 18%. It went from like 11 or 10% to 18% or something crazy, almost doubling it overnight. And what happened? The Russian economy avoided a recession. Everyone thought it was going to go into a recession despite these crushing sanctions. It avoided a recession. It's growing, you know, at a pace that's faster than most economists, even the most optimistic economists. It's growing faster than they forecast. It's not growing a lot, but it avoided a recession. And why? That 18% interest rate is a fiscal stimulus, and Russia has nowhere near the outstanding, public debt like the United States. In other words, the Russian sovereign debt is nominally far lower and as a percentage of GDP. So all that means is less distribution, right? Less distribution of that income. Here we have massive, and it's held, you know, it's 18 trillion. So we're looking at that. As I'm very interested to see when that happens, because I think when that happens, you're going to see people sell the stock market just on a reflex. And I think that's going to be an enormous, enormous buying opportunity. I think they're going to get faked out. It's going to be selling by the same people who were telling us that the QE and all the Fed monetary operations were going to lead to inflation and hyperinflation and the collapse of the dollar and spiking interest rates and all that stuff, which not only didn't happen, but the opposite happened. Okay? Now, the other thing that I go back, let me go back to the Paul Craig Roberts. The other thing was that, you know, like all good supply side advocates or proponents, propagandists. He says that it was because of Reagan policies. You know, this is the classic line, because of Reagan policies, inflation came down. And again, you could see exactly in line with Reagan coming into office that we had a collapse in oil prices. And again, that is totally discounted and totally dismissed by him. And that was not a factor. It was the supply side. Yet, show me, see, I have an open mind. Show me where we see an expansion in supply. By supply, that is total output of goods and services. That's GDP. You would see that. I mean, if that was really true, you would see that, wouldn't you? That would be in the numbers. Yet you cannot find that. I challenge anyone to show me where that is evident in the numbers, in the actual data. We did not see an increase in output. Yes, nominally we saw an increase in output, but the rate of growth in the economy slowed down measurably. You could see it very clearly. So I mean, if it was supposed to work the way they say it works, or said it works, then why don't we see it? We do not see it. And yet, at the same time, they're very dismissive of oil embargoes and oil price crashes. Now, that was not it. It was all Reagan's policies. But, I'll accept that if I can see the facts, if I can see where that was true. I just do not see where that was true. So, anyway, it was very disappointing. I look forward to talking to Paul Craig Roberts. He's got a southern accent. You know, he's a slow talker. I mean, he's a very educated guy. He held some policy positions. Again, I don't know what his assistant treasury secretary. I'm certainly not the assistant treasury. So that was the other thing. You know, he attacked my credentials. So it's kind of a somewhat of an ad hominem, you know, who are you? Like, where did you, do you have a degree? I mean, you know, this is ridiculous. Do I, even if I did not, look, Warren Mosler has a bachelor's degree in economics, all right? I have a higher degree than that, but Warren Mosler has a bachelor's degree in economics from the University of Connecticut, okay? That's not exactly Harvard, and it's not exactly a PhD, but does it matter? I mean, for all his, mistakes recently, Mosler can run circles around these guys in terms of economics. So, I mean, does it matter? Does it help anything to question what my education is? Look, I went to Wharton undergrad. I went to UCLA. Not bad schools. Not bad schools to go to University of Pennsylvania, Wharton, right? But I don't do that. I mean, you know, look, you can look at guys like Reinhardt and Rogoff, Ken Rogoff. You look at what all their fancy studies, their Harvard professors, and got totally ripped to shreds by a couple of grad students from University of Massachusetts. So that does nothing. You better read my book, Norman, and, give yourself an education. I think to me, it's you really can keep things simple in life. To me, number one, it's preposterous that we threaten the Soviet Union with spending. Here's a country that defeated Nazi Germany and lost 20 million of its citizens fighting and defeated the Nazis, almost single-handedly. I mean, the Brits were about to go under. We didn't even get there until most of the job was done already. And we fought a very, very tiny German force. Like I said, it was a mop-up because most of the German army was on the Eastern Front fighting the Russians. So to say, how could people really still accept that? You know, that's another one of the, what that is to me, is another example of this kind of blind American jingoistic patriotism. You know, we're the greatest country in the world, and, you know, we defeated communism, and you know, we're the beacon of freedom. Meanwhile, the only war that we ever really won was defeating a small island in the Pacific, and only after we dropped two nuclear bombs. We're the only country in the world that used nuclear weapons. And we defeated Japan because in the end we had to drop two nuclear bombs on a little tiny island. But I mean, Europe, if the Russians had not engaged, and they didn't start it, okay? The Germans attacked, you know, they're not even, you know, people look at the Russians as this very sinister, I think in all their history, they never started a war. They were attacked every single time, you know, every marauding tribe and civilization and empire walked across their country, which is basically a continent, trying to subdue. They're their own worst enemy internally. Yes, they've had some terrible rulers, no doubt about it, and I think they have a penchant for self-sabotage. But I mean, they didn't start it, they finished it, and they, you know, the cost to them was enormous. And so to say, like, they couldn't bear the cost of continuing an arms race and they just laid down and said, okay, I mean, that's this. Why would they do that? You know, if it was as simple as that, I mean, it was a bipolar world. There was America and there were the Russians, the two superpowers. And Reagan saying, okay, can you even imagine a meeting like that? I can't. And why did Gorbachev give up? I don't know. I do not know. And that's what I said to him. I don't know. You have to ask Gorbachev. I'm not inside his head. I have no idea why he gave up, you know? And neither does Paul Craig Roberts, for that matter. And it certainly wasn't because Reagan said, hey, can you imagine at the bargaining table, we're going to spend a lot of money. If it was me, I'm not, you know, again, I don't know what was in Gorbachev's head. If it was me, I'd say, buddy, we lost 20 million people fighting the Nazis, and we won. Who liberated the concentration camps in Poland and in Eastern Europe, okay? That Holocaust. Who liberated? Who went in there? It wasn't the Americans. It was the Russians. I would say, buddy, you trying to scare us? Are you serious? I mean, you're literally trying to scare us? I mean, you have no idea what we've been through and what we're capable of when you talk about awaken the sleeping giant, right? What the Japanese said about the Americans. I mean, so I don't know how any educated person could really still to this day accept this line. And it just, I don't think this line ever sound, even back in the day when I was a big time Reagan supporter, it still kind of sounded funny to me. That's how we beat them? We threatened to spend more money? Like, I mean, we threatened to spend more money. And the other thing is, I don't know, maybe I'll post I'll tell you why I'm not posting it. I didn't conduct myself well. You know, I got a little bit heated. But this was the gist of the conversation. Basically, this was the gist of the conversation. Anyway, that's it, folks. Try to get some other guest on here soon to continue the podcast. But very, very interested in your comments. So please put your comments up there on the blog, and let's get a little conversation going. That's it for now. Take care. Bye-bye.